Welcome to Let's Talk Land, a weekly land education talk show devoted to learning about land and farms, buying and selling, ownership, especially for real estate agents and realtors. Learn from the experts. Free land education. Hi, my name's Lou Jewell. I'm an accredited land consultant with United Country Real Estate, Sutton Properties, our new company and name, along with my co-host, Teresa Martin. Hey, Teresa.
Hi, Lou.
Teresa's one of our agents, been with us about a year, so you got the professor, the student, and our guest here I'll introduce in a second as the expert. Our new company name is United Country Real Estate Sutton Properties, along with buying and selling homes, land and farms in western Piedmont, North Carolina, or southern Virginia. Give us a shout. We'll help you out. Our new office is located at 102 East Main Street next to BB&T Bank, downtown Pilot Mountain, North Carolina. Please make a note of our changes in our new company website is www.allsuttonproperties.com. That's A-L-L-S-U-T-T-O-N properties.com. Program note, Dr. Barbie's Ask the Doctor show will now follow this show and will air at 10 a.m. So stay tuned. Dr. Barbie's always got something interesting to talk about. Help you out. Our guest today is Jim Van Sickle. Cowboy Jim, welcome.
Thank you very much, Lou. Pleasure to be with you.
Well, I was with you last. I was with you last week. Starting tomorrow and Friday, we had the Realtors Land Institute Land 101 class that I've been teaching since 2003, and you were one of our students. I tell you, that was a great class and one of the best ones I've had. And I really enjoyed meeting you guys and being in Tulsa, Oklahoma, where you are today.
I really enjoyed your class. It was a lot of fun. It was a lot of stuff I already knew, but it was brought back memories. So it was a refresher course for me, and I really enjoyed it. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Yes, great job.
Thank you. I hope you learned something new, too. We always like to pick up one or two things.
You bet.
You're with Caldwell Banker Select, and you guys have a Group 7 group. That's the name of your company, Group 7, right? You're out of Bixby, Oklahoma.
That's correct. We've been together. My partner's Greg Gansko, and we've been together for about 7 or 8 years now.
Well, he was in class two and several other of your team, and I tell you, it was really a fun time. So, although you were born in Texas, you call Oklahoma your home. You've been for the past 30 years. I think you spent about 15 of those years you lived in Tulsa for the past 15. You enjoy living with horses and dogs. I got my doggie right here, Shadow, with us.
I understand Shadow's been a celebrity.
Yes, she
is.
She still is. Sometimes she interrupts the show, so beware. But you actually live in...
I've been involved in real estate for the last 30 years, and I really enjoy it. Been primarily 100% or 90% selling land and ranches, and the other 10% residential. I really enjoy it. I meet a lot of friends and everything else. I'm a member of lifetime member of Marine Corps League. I enjoy that. We meet every fourth Saturday, and it's all veterans, and we all lie about our war stories, but outside of that, we have a good time.
Yes, you are. My dad was a Marine, actually twice, before the war and during the war, so we got a couple tours there.
Yeah, my brother was a Marine.
So, go Marines.
You bet.
While you're talking about it, I just did a little research. The Marine Corps League is the only congressionally chartered U.S. United States Marine Corps-related veterans organization in the United States. Its congressional charter was approved by the 75th Congress and signed by Franklin D. Roosevelt, August 4, 1937. The organization credits its founding in 1923 to Legionnaire Marine Corps, the Commander John A. Lejeune, and there's a military base here in North Carolina named after him.
That's correct. That's a training base for boot camp and combat training. I'm a San Diego Marine. I went West Coast.
I got you.
A Hollywood Marine. So.
Yeah, two great places, and what a great organization. The mission of the Marine Corps League is to promote the interest and to preserve tradition of the United States Marine Corps, strengthening the fraternity of Marines and their families, serve Marines, FMF Corpsmen. What's FMF Corpsmen?
That's Corpsmen.
But what's the acronym, FMF and FMM Chaplers?
Fraternal Marine. I'm sorry, I don't remember.
That's okay. I didn't mean to put you on the spot.
There's a funny story about this, Lou. When I joined the Marine Corps, I had dropped out of mortuary school. At the time, I worked at a funeral home in all through high school, drove ambulances, and I went up to the Marine recruiter, and I said, what kind of medical corps you have here? Because I had a lot of first aid experience and stuff like that. And he said, son, you got the best medical corps in the armed forces. The only thing he didn't tell me, I had to be in the Navy to be in it. Two things the Marine Corps doesn't have, and that's chaplains and corpsmen.
Really?
So there's a little history for you. Actually, the Marine Corps is part of the Department of the Navy.
Okay. Well, I'm learning something today. How long did you serve, and did you serve overseas?
I served overseas, and I served. I spent my 18th birthday in Hong Kong, and then I went to Japan, Hawaii, Okinawa. It was a great experience for a young man that didn't know exactly what he wanted to do yet, and I really enjoyed it. And I'd highly recommend it to anybody that's kind of confused. And I had a judge help me make my decision, so that's where I went.
Wonder what, we don't want to talk about that, right? Teresa's over here like, wonder what that was. What? You call yourself Cowboy Jim. Why do you do that?
I was on a cattle drive years ago, about 1995. My wife and I were... It was a cattle drive going from Fort Worth, Texas to Miles City, Montana. It was the recreation of the Chisholm cattle drives. And I stopped through this little town, and this kid walked up to me and said, can I have your autograph? And so I just signed it Cowboy Jim, and it just kind of stuck. And everybody's called me either Cowboy or Cowboy Jim ever since.
I love it.
I wear tall boots and always wear a cowboy hat and scarf in the wintertime, and I like the part.
I love your brochure you handed out at the class. It says, let a cowboy sell your property. That's a beautiful brochure, and it's very well done. Jim, one of the things I want to... Go ahead.
No, I was going to tell you, I have a billboard going south of Tulsa, I've gotten six deals off this billboard. It says the same thing, let a cowboy sell your property.
I love it.
And it's owned by the Chamber of Commerce, the small town. And I've gotten about four or six deals out of it so far. So it's paid for itself already for the next 2 years.
Absolutely. I love to hear stories like that. One of the things I wanted to talk about today, Teresa and I, is, when you become a realtor, a real estate agent, you know, a lot of us just go play the game of real estate, but a lot of us get involved in organizations, and you're involved in quite a few, and that's what I wanted to kind of talk about today, and a little history, because there's some of these, it all relates to land, and that's what the thesis of this show is anything that we can talk about that relates to land. But one of the things that we obviously have here, too, is you've been on the board of directors of your Home Builders Association for the greater Tulsa area. Tell us about that. What do they do, and what's the purpose of the Home Builders Association?
The Home Builder Association is the nearest thing we have to probably a union out here in Oklahoma. It's a great organization. It not only has the home builders and the associates dealing with home builders, But it's a great organization. It's regulated by the board, and we kind of watch out for people that are fly-by-nights, or, you know, they might put a plastic sign on their truck and say, I'm a home builder.
Right.
We want to check these people out and make sure their credentials is correct. So that's what it basically boils down to. And I got involved in that in about 1988. And got really active as an associate member and sat on the board for about 5 years. And I use it as a great source of experience to hear again to on my COI is to get my name out there.
That's what it's all about, is helping other people, getting involved, networking, and that's how we build our business, right?
That's exactly right.
I'm curious, we have a Home Builders Association here. Is that a national organization, or is it just in your state? I wonder if they're affiliated.
No, they're not affiliated. Each state should have a local Home Builders Association, and it is connected to the National Home Builders Association.
Okay.
Okay? So I don't know what the news would be there in North Carolina. But I strongly recommend you check it out, because it could be, very fundamental for your team.
Yeah, we have one, actually several in the state. We have one in Winston-Salem in the larger urban areas around the state. I'm not sure how many. I didn't check on that.
Well, I know we have one here because we used to go to the Christmas party every year.
Oh, really? They have good parties?
They had a good Christmas party.
Yeah, they always have a Christmas party, and they always do charity work and build a home for Habitat for Humanity and different things like that. It's very well organized.
Yeah, I remember many years ago after Hugo came through. We had the national convention about a month after that in New Orleans, and quite a few. I think. Several thousand were organized, and they went out and actually built quite a few homes during the real estate convention, which, realtors, people don't realize this, but we're your best friends. I tell people when they travel, and you lose a tooth or have an accident or something, call a daggum real estate agent, because they know everybody, and they can network and they can make the phone call and make things happen. So there's realtors out there. We're a wonderful resource for those. So use us. That's what we love doing, helping people. That's our main goal, is helping, solving problems and helping people.
Exactly.
I want to move into another one of the organizations you've been involved in, is the Rural Water District's number 6 of pronounce that again?
You pronounce it Okmulgee. It's an Indian name.
Right. And the goal is... And the goal is to provide safe, clean, and sparkling water for all your residents. But now, in the East, different parts of the country have different water rights, okay?
And
that's correct. And Oklahoma, you guys have what you call water, land, and management. I did some research on it. And the overview for water rights and administrative sources of water law, the right to use water, the right to regulate the use of water, ownership rights of water, the prevention of pollution of water, water quality, and all the legal matters to do some degree or another may be addressed by constitutional law, court-made common law, or principal statutes entered by the U.S. Congress, statutes erected by state legislatures, Indian tribe codes, federal and state agency rules, and private rights created by deeds, easements, and contracts. It says the administration of water use and the rights of Oklahoma involves consideration of these and other rights in Oklahoma involving consideration of these and other sorts of voluminous and complex law, quantity, distinguished from quality. Oklahoma's status provides the Oklahoma Resource Board, through the agency's 9-member decision-making body appointed by the governor, is responsible for the appropriation, allocation, distribution, management of water quality in the state. They share responsibility with 6 other state environment agencies relative to water quality, the Grand River Exception, an exception authority that managed water quality involving the Grand River. That's your biggest river, right, going through Oklahoma?
That's correct.
Okay. In 1935, the state created the Grand River Dam Authority and provided the authority with control and store of preservation of water Grand River and its tributaries. The physical classifications of most water in Oklahoma statutes of water rights used in administration are keyed to the 4 principal characteristics of water: stream water, percolating groundwater, diffused or sheet runoff water, and atmospheric water such as rain and hail. So those are some of the overview. And our guest today is Cowboy Jim Van Sickle, and this is Let's Talk Land. About these water rights, you guys are an Indian country out there, part of your state. there's some Indian and Federal Reserve water rights. Tell us a little bit about that. And you're on the board or have been on the board, and why you got on it and what the benefits are, and give us a little background.
Well, I was on the board for the Okmulgee Rural Water District number 6, which covers Okmulgee County in Oklahoma, and we have about 35. It's a co-op board, and it's a co-op operation, and we have about 3,500 members. We don't have any water. We buy our water actually from Tulsa, and so does some of the other water boards. It's where you can't, you know, if you try to have a ranch, and our ground out here is very clay and rocky, and it's pretty hard to dig a well. So we have these water boards that are water co-ops, I mean, that are funded and take care of it. It's not expensive, but it doesn't cost as much as somebody in Tulsa would pay for water. So,
is that and that's statewide? That's statewide.
Yes, most the towns or counties, I should say, in Oklahoma have a co-op water system.
Okay.
And just like also on electric, here in Tulsa, we have a public service company, but in Okmulgee or some of the other counties, we might have Oklahoma ONG, which is Oklahoma Natural Gas, or we might have East Central Electric, and these are all co-ops as well. So
when you're listing and selling ranches out there, you know, you need to know who these providers are and all the stipulations that they have, right?
Yes. One of the first things I ask the seller is, who has your, you know, do you have the mineral rights, and or do you know where they are? Is your abstract up to date? We're an abstract state. I think we and Iowa are the only two states that are still abstract states.
It's tight.
It's always interesting to try to track down the abstract.
Yeah, so, just for clarification, Jim, you know, abstract is the same here. We call it title. So, you know, it's going back doing the deed research and transfer of property and then writing an opinion on it. Yeah, same thing. For title insurance, you just call it something different,
When I lived in Texas, we call it title as well.
Right.
It goes all the way back to, in Texas, it goes all the way back to when New Mexico was part of, I mean, not New Mexico, but when Mexico was part of, own Texas. So you got to really go back far for some of this stuff.
So tell us a little bit about the Indian federal rights out there and the water rights for the Indian tribes.
Well, it was all started back in 1830. As I said, the company, the Winters Doctrine, and derived of the Winters versus the U.S. Federal Court decision, 1830. The U.S. Entered into treaties with five southeastern tribes, the Cherokee, Muscogees, which is Creek, Choctaw, and Chickasaw, and Seminole Nations. And these tribes, in exchange for their homelands in Georgia, North Carolina, and Tennessee, Mississippi, Alabama, Florida, they traded their lands, and they became, and they forced, Andrew Jackson forced them to move to Oklahoma, and creating the Trail of Tears. Following the Civil War, similar treaties were entered into the additional tribes. They exchanged for Oklahoma. Most individuals before statehood in the eastern portion of Oklahoma, Indian Territory, prior to statehood, several large areas of land were granted to Indian tribes by federal government. There's a total of 39 tribes in Oklahoma, and each one of them has their own police force, their own Supreme Court, and they're pretty independent, especially when it comes to casinos.
Right, yeah, that seems to be around the country. Now, does realtors in your area, do they actually buy and sell, trade Indian land?
Not so much now as they did back in the 30s, early 20s, late 40s, during the oil boom. people would find land, and then they'd speculate on drilling oil, and they'd make a deal with an individual, 100% Indian, and give him any rights for the oil, pay him rights for the oil, and a lot of murders up in Osage County. Indians would disappear during the night because they had all the oil. So.
Right. Well, but not today. Basically, none of the Indian control land is bought or sold, right?
They control some land, but most of it is in a trust or something like that.
Right. So. Teresa, we're going to switch horses here. You got a question on that before we go?
Is the land owned by individuals or just by the tribe itself? Is it?
No, it's owned by individuals.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the other thing I was wondering about is that water co-op. Is that, where do you get water from a water co-op? I mean, I know an electric co-op, is it natural water or is it piped in?
It's piped in.
Okay.
But it's coming from your main river source, right?
Right, right. It's coming, it's coming from Okmulgee Lake or one of the lakes, one of the many lakes in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Right.
Are you restricted? Or can you use the water, and do you pay for it? Like here, it's based on how much you use?
It's based on how much you use. The biggest problem with these little co-ops is that you'll get, you buy a tap, and here in Oklahoma, the taps will run anywhere from $1,500 to $1,800. But what a owner will do is that he'll build another home on there, or pull a trailer on there, and the things we have to watch out for is that he'll hook a water hose to this other tap. So he's stealing water, basically.
Gotcha. Well, they do that here, too. We have tap feeds in the urban areas, which is for your meters and so on, and then you pay based on the usage. So pretty similar.
But each year the water's tested annually, and then it has to pass a water test, and just like it probably any other state. So pretty simple.
Teresa, I'm going to switch horses. Actually, we're going to talk about horses. You remember the American Quarter Horse Association, and just a little bit on that. It was based out of Amarillo, Texas. It's an international organization dedicated to preservation and improvement of record keeping for American quarter horses. The association sanctions many competitive events and maintains official registration. The organization also houses the American Quarter Horse Hall of Fame and Museum and sponsors educational programs. The organization founded in 1940 in Fort Worth, Texas, and now has nearly 234,000 members, and over 32,000 of which are international. And just for a point of interest, Texas reports the largest horse population with the estimated of 978,822 horses, leading other states, including California with about 700,000, Florida with about 500,000, Oklahoma with about 326,000, Kentucky 320, Ohio a little over 300, and Missouri about 280, and that's as of September. The world horse population is around 58 million. Shana, I think there's more horses out there than there is doggies.
That's probably true. My wife and I grew up on a ranch in Texas, and my wife, before she passed away, she grew up in Chicago. And when we got married, we moved to Oklahoma. She said, "I want a horse." And I said, "All they do is bite and check. You don't want a horse." So she finally wore me down, and I bought some horses and got into teaching horsemanship again. And so we both joined a program with Pat Pirelli and learned how to teach natural horsemanship. And that's where you're not jerking on the horse all the time. You're using your legs to guide the horse, just like the Indians did when they were riding horses and shooting bow and arrows. So it was a lot of fun. The horse respects you, and the horse understands you and is not scared of you. They know you're going to take care of them.
Now, didn't the horses came from Europe, right? I mean, they're not indigenous to the United States. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Yeah.
That's correct. They came with the Spaniards.
Yeah, the conquistadors. Right, the Spanish. Yeah, they brought them over. And
right.
Yeah. So tell me about the American Quarter Horse Association. What's the benefit of being involved in that, and how does that help you in your real estate brokerage?
Well, I let everybody know that I'm a member of the Quarter Horse Association, which is the largest association for horses, horse owners, and same for the American Paint Horse, same for the Missouri Fox Trotters. The American Paint Horse is an association that basically distinguishes between a paint horse, American Paint Horse, and a Pinto, and the difference there is that the American Paint Horse is more wide. It has more spots than where a Pinto horse would just have maybe one or two spots. So, and all that goes back to teaching horsemanship, which we did for a long time. And I've never ridden. I've always ridden quarter horses, and my wife had always ridden paint horses. But one time I saw an ad in the paper for a Missouri Fox Trotter. And the Missouri Fox Trotter is a gated horse. And originally founded in Missouri, they naturally came from Tennessee. I mean, they were Tennessee walking horses. And they bred these horses into Missouri Fox Trotters. And the nice thing about this horse, I bought this horse from a cowboy working the stockyards, and it was a turnback horse, where he was turning back cattle that had too many in the pen, so he'd use his horse to turn back cattle. I used it for sorting cattle and stuff like that. It was a very effective horse, but as I said, he's a gated horse, very smooth riding. He'd like to be sitting in an easy chair, and the guy said, "Cowboy, you can." Ride this horse all day and dance all night. And more than one time, I've proved that to be true.
I hear you. So these organizations, Teresa, got a question?
Yeah, I was wondering, is a quarter horse, and I've always wondered this, I've always loved horses, but, I mean, I grew up, we had Appaloosas and Morgans, but an American quarter horse, is that a specific type of horse, or how is it different?
It's a breeding.
So is it made more for cattle work?
It's more for cattle, and it'll go really fast, in a quarter mile, long ways, more so than your other normal horse. Same thing for American Paint Horse, does the same thing. But it's the breeding. It was founded by the owners of the King Ranch and several other ranches, started breeding these horses and to getting what they wanted on the quarter horse. And then, as I said, it was founded in 1940 in Fort Worth, Texas.
Okay.
So how do these organizations help in your real estate business?
Well, because, like, next month will be the Quarter Horse World Show, and I'll go there and see people I haven't seen maybe in a year or 6 months or so, and I'll glad hand and hand out business cards and stuff like that. And it's all networking.
So yeah.
All of this is networking.
Exactly.
I mean, that is the key to success in real estate. It's not who you are, it's who you know.
Seems to work out that way, doesn't it?
Yep.
So.
Let me go on and
we got about a minute. Go ahead.
Okay. I was going to tell you about all these horse, the top states that have cattle.
Uh-huh.
Texas is the largest state with cattle, and that 12,500, 12,500,000 cattle, and which is 13.24% of all the cattle in the United States. So we can get into that after your break if you'd like to.
Yeah, it sounds good. Our guest today is Jim Van Sickle, the Cowboy Jim, and this is Let's Talk Land. Here we go, members of the Oklahoma Cattlemen's Association. The OCA is a member of Lead of Drive organization with vision and leadership. It serves and strengthens and advocates for Oklahoma, the cattle industry. It's more than a membership. It's a business investment. They exist to defend the beef cattle industry at the nation's capital, ensure they're heavy in legislation and state legislation and media. They represent over 5,000 Oklahoma ranches families, and they believe in standing together, and they can meet issues head-on to impact the changes and ideas affecting the future of our livelihood. Cattlemen share common interests, including respect for the land and livestock entrusted to them, and standing together, they can protect those issues. So how long have you been a member of that, and why did you get involved?
I've been a member of that for the last 6 to 8 years, and the reason I'm joining that is because if you're talking to cattle people, you need to know what you're talking about, and they furnish a monthly magazine that I read, look through, and get new ideas. And then once a year, they'll have a convention, and I always go to that convention and pass out cards and meet people. And you always hear, I've forgotten you're in the real estate business. Coming up in December, my partner, Greg Gensko, and I and my other team members, we're going to do the Tulsa Farm Show. We have a booth there, and we'll have banners up, letting everybody know what we do, and have a sign-up sheet. And we usually give away some kind of prize of some type, TV or shotgun or something like that. So it's some incentive just to get them to where I get their name, address, email, and phone number. That's all it's all about. But I'm both a member of the Oklahoma Cattlemen's Association, also the Osage Cattlemen's Association, and the Okmulgee Cattlemen's Association. These are offsprings of the Oklahoma Cattlemen's Association, but they're more local associations that I'm involved with.
It's one of the largest and oldest organizations in the Osage County Cattlemen's Association. Golly, I'm getting too old for this. Anyway, they were organized in 1934, and of course, you said they hold annual meetings and ranch tours. I bet that's a lot of fun.
Right.
And they were formed near the end of World War II, including the Northwest Oklahoma Cattlemen Association, which was formed in 45. And then there's other organizations. Like you said, it's all part of one. And then there's a question, how many cows? We talked about horses. How many cows are they? There's 94.4 million cattle and calves as of 2008. It's up from 93,707 million cattle and calves from 2017. And there's over three times more beef cows than milk cows live in the United States. And you were giving us a breakdown earlier with Texas at 12.5 million. You want to conclude that?
Yeah, Texas is the largest cattle producing state with 12,500,000. It represents 13.24% of the U.S. Second to that is Nebraska with 6,800,000. And Kansas comes in there third at 6,300,000, California at 5,200,000, and Oklahoma was 5,100,000. The other three remaining states of the top 10 is Iowa with 4 million, South Dakota with 4 million, and Colorado with 2,850,000, which leads me to right into the Texas Southwestern Cattlemen's Association. Okay?
Yeah, tell us about that.
This is an association I belong to, very proud of. It was formed in 1877 by 40 Texas cattlemen. The purpose was to unbridle livestock theft, which, if you believe it or not, still goes on today. I was reading my Southwestern Cattlemen's news magazine this morning, and had two convictions of 7 cows were stolen, and the guy got—he might have got $10,000, $15,000 for the 7 cows, but he also got 20 years in prison. So
it wasn't worth. And that's what the associations. All these were really, as I was doing my research, it was really started to protect the thefts of cows, wasn't it? That was the main.
That's correct. We have about 30 special rangers, four of them here in Oklahoma, and that's what I'm going to tonight, to hear them talk, and they'll give me a chance to talk as well about the G7 group and the land and cattle business, land and ranch business, I mean. So Greg went last night up in Pawhuska, and I'm going tonight over in Wagner County, which is the eastern part of Oklahoma. So
seems like a fun group.
It is a fun group, and you're always meeting new people, and then you're always meeting people that you've known for quite a while, and you've done deals with, and things of that nature. All the investigators have Texas Rangers credentials. Here in Oklahoma, it's Oklahoma Investigation program that they have, but they all carry Texas Rangers commissions, and they have arresting powers, and they pack guns. And back in the early days, it was very usual for a cattle investigator trying to arrest the guy, and the guy just gets up and shoots him.
Wow.
So it was in Oklahoma didn't become a state until 1904, and it was pretty Wild West still then.
That's what I was getting ready to say, the Wild Wild West.
Yep. So it's a great organization, as I said. It's a good chance for me to get up and network with people that are going to stick for a steak and baked potatoes tonight and iced tea. And each ranger, we have four here in the state, they'll get up and tell them about ways to protect your property. Don't build your pen so close to the road. You know, check on your cows daily. This guy I told you about, he was watching absentee owner's cows, and all of a sudden the absentee owner came up one weekend and started counting cows, and some came up missing. So one of the investigators started investigating, going to livestock auctions, and found out that this guy had sold seven of the guy's cows. Barrett, here in this market here, a calf drops, it's around $500.
Okay.
For a calf, and then for a full-blown cow, it'll go $1,500 to $1,800, depending on the market, and then bull will be a little bit more than that. So it's
real money.
It's real money, even though people don't think it is.
Right.
And they said, well, he won't miss this money or any like that. So it's a good organization. As I said, I've been a member since 1998 of this organization, and it's paid off for me.
You were also, we'll switch here a little bit again, you're also a member of the Realtors Land Institute, and one of my fellow brothers and landman, and with our landladies. And tell us about your impression of the Realtors Land Institute and why you joined. And you were, of course, in our class last week. And tell us a little bit about your impression of the Realtors Land Institute.
I was a member before, and I dropped 2012. And then I got struggling a little bit on some hard times. My wife was sick and died of cancer. After your class last week, I remember how much fun it was. I went to the conference one time. It was a lot of fun there. Lots of people to meet and change stories. And it's just a really nice group. And so I'd forgotten about that, and you reminded me of it. And that's the reason I joined. I'm going to go to the national conference in San Antonio. I look forward to that. And I've got a lot of friends that are members in Texas that are members of the organization. I think Texas has the biggest chapter.
They do.
I think one of my good friends, Deidre Robertson, is a past president of the Texas chapter.
Yep, and I've been the president. I've been a member since 1998. I took my first class with Ned Massey in 1997. And, of course, got my ALC in 2004, I believe it was. And I've been our chapter president twice over the years, and received the Chapter Realtor of the Year Award twice. So, and of course, I'm one of the instructors for the Realtors Land Institute, one of our 10 classes. And we're 76 years old. There's only about 1,300 of us of like 1.2, 1.3 million realtors. We're one of the smallest groups in the realtor organization, but we're just so dynamic, and it's a brotherhood and sisterhood. It's unlike any of the other, I think, organizations. We really look after and take care of each other and network and do business and just have a large time. I know I always hear that when we go and have these land conferences that we have one of the highest bar bills of any organization that visits that particular town. So, we'll see you down there too.
I tell people all the time, selling land is totally different than selling residential.
How's that?
I see these realtors and these cute young ladies with their stilettos and their short skirts, and they look so cute and everything else.
Uh-huh.
And I've seen them jump out of or try to get out of a four wheeler and sink those stilettos to sink right into some cow mesh.
There you go. But it is different.
So I usually charge more in selling land than a residential will, but I tell them why I do this is because I come to every showing, whether it's my buyer or not. I want to explain to them, this is what I explain to the seller.
Sure, of course.
I want to explain to them what the difference is between an aerobic system, a lagoon system, or a septic system. I want to explain to them the boundaries of what this property line creates. Anytime I go on a listing, I always do an aerial of the property before, and I have that in front of me, where 90% of the other realtors or land people do not do that. So I keep that as an extra.
It's always important that you know as much or more about the property you're getting ready to sell than the owner, and that gives you a lot of respect, and you know, it's the way it should be done. A lot of people don't take land serious, and
it makes you the specialist and not just a realtor.
Exactly. How does that help you? Is there any particular deal or something you've done over the last couple of years that stands out?
Well, I took a listing last year. It was in a trust, and it was 100% floodplain. And it was 135 acres. I said, oh, I just don't know what's going to do with this deal here. And I sold it within 12 weeks. And the guy that bought it was an old friend of mine who loves to hunt. And he said, I've been looking at this property for 10 years. And he paid full price for it. No patent whatsoever. But all he wanted to do is, it has hogs, it has white-tailed deer, it has lots of fish, the big river runs through it, so I mean, it's his paradise.
Recreational property. That's what's hot right
now. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Around the country. We've got a new course, too, that we just launched on recreational brokerage that I'm anxious to attend. You know, even though you have the ALC, there's not a lot of classes you don't get to take. So all of them are good. And every time you take one, you learn something, and you take that and you apply it and you make more money. Teresa, we got to get you involved in RLI here pretty soon. She's still finishing up her broker requirements. So we'll get that behind you. You have any questions?
If you learn one thing, get one thing out of a course that you've paid money for or what, it'll pay for itself. So, I mean, that's the way I look at it. And not only the fellowship counts, but also the learning experience.
Absolutely. Networking, again, it's a different type of networking. Now you're networking with your peers as opposed to networking in organizations, and it all runs together and ties together and makes you a better agent. Teresa, you got a question?
One of my latest deals, Blue, is I picked up a buyer from Iowa, a horse person. She and her husband both have horses, he's a roper, and she's a English rider. But they go up in Des Moines, Iowa, and they said, this is our last winter. And they came down here in the summer, and I sold them 70 acres and a beautiful home and everything else. And I had both sides of it. Greg had the listing side, and I had the selling side. So we really enjoyed working together, he and I do.
And you know, you get a lot of long-term friends in the real estate industry too. It's that's one thing I enjoy about what we do. Have a passion for it, obviously. I'm 70 years old. I'll never retire. It's just that type of business. People don't realize that you know, you still want to get up in the morning instead of doing nothing and go play real estate. And it's nothing more enjoyable than that.
Exactly. Exactly. It'd be easy to sit on the couch and watch some TV show or whatever. But I turned 78 in January, and believe me, I'm still going, and I still want to go on.
You're a fine example, Jim. You're a fine example. How's the market in Oklahoma? I mean, is it, you know, it seemed to be, when I was in Tulsa, it was kind of interesting. It's quite a diversified area in terms of job employment, and seems to be pretty steady. Everywhere I went, which wasn't a lot, you know, everything's new, and everybody's happy.
Well, Oklahoma now is very diversified. When I first moved here in the 80s, it was primarily oil. In about 80 or 83, something like that, the oil busted down, and people were being laid off right and left. And so the city fathers really decided a 10-year program, and it's or longer, and it's really worked out where banking has become more and more prevalent here in Oklahoma and in northeast Oklahoma, as well as insurance business. And They've done a good job of diversifying, and I think we're in a solid economy here in Oklahoma. Even when the unemployment was high during the previous presidential years, it was we did okay. We did fine.
Why would our listing audience want to come to Oklahoma?
I'm sorry, please?
Why would our listing audience want to come to relocate to Oklahoma?
Well, the weather is one thing. I mean, if you live up north and everything, like a couple in Iowa, they only had a summer for about 3 months, and then they start going into fall and winter. And so that's the primary reason they wanted to move to Oklahoma. And he had a job transfer to where he could move anywhere, and she worked out of the house, so it didn't matter, but it was so limitless to where they could ride their horses. And so that's the reason why they moved to Oklahoma. And that would be a good reason why anybody would want to move to Oklahoma. We have a lower housing cost. We have beautiful weather. As I said, it'll snow in January, and then it'll be gone the next day. Everybody here, I had a chance to move back to Texas. I have a sister had lived back in Texas, and she said, "Well, I'm not going to come up there and check on you." I said, "Well, I'm not ready to move yet." So I've got a lot of friends here, and you know, you never know how rich you are until you have the friends around you.
Absolutely.
So what's a warm day in Oklahoma? How hot does it get there?
I'm sorry?
How hot does it get in Oklahoma? What's the average temperature?
Oh, it's about 75 degrees year round.
Oh, my God, I'm coming to Oklahoma.
No, you're not.
Yes, I am.
No, you're not.
I'm going to work with
my
boy Jim.
I got too much invested in you. No,
what investments are? They come and go.
No, July and August are probably our hottest months, where it'll hit 100, but the heat index will be 103. But it's very humidity, lots of humidity. But I enjoy it. It's not bad. I mean, I grew up in a place that didn't have any air conditioning. We had an outhouse, and we had the windows up. That was our air conditioning. And in the wintertime, we had a fireplace.
Yeah. So Oklahoma, too, is a great hunting state, isn't it? What's the critters
it
you
is
got
a great
there?
Hunting state.
What kind of critters you got there?
Well, we've got a lot of deer. We've got a lot of, if you go east and south, you got a lot of bears.
What type of bears, Jim?
Brown bears.
Okay.
And then all kinds of bobcats and stuff like that. And I always tell landowners, I said, there's places that have pigs, and there's places that are going to have pigs because of the wild pigs run wild. And I brought in 100 one night, and he killed 9 pigs during the night. So they have 3 litters a year. So and when they have a litter, they're going to have 10 or 12.
Well, like bunny rabbits, Shana.
Yep, exactly.
And your fishing's good there too, I hear.
Oh, the fishing's great. Fishing's great. If you love golf, we've got great golf courses all around. It's just a friendly family atmosphere here, and I'm not saying that where you folks live it's not. I'm just saying that I really enjoy Oklahoma, and of course, I lived in Indiana for a short period of time when I was in the broadcast business, and I couldn't wait to get back. So. I really enjoy Oklahoma, and you know, they say you can take the Texan out of Texas, but you can't take the Texan. You can't take the Texas out of Texan, out of a Texan.
But same for Oklahoma, right?
Exactly.
So why do you think that Oklahoma has 5,100,000 cattle and Texas has 12,500,000? What's the difference? Is it the
Texas is bigger?
Is it? I was going to say, is it just simply because Texas is a larger state?
Larger state? I mean, have you ever driven across Texas?
Nope.
You won't do it in a day.
It looks pretty big. It looks pretty big.
It
I was
is.
Just wondering if, you know, what if there was a difference in the you were talking about. People stealing cattle. I was wondering if there was a difference in natural predators killing cattle.
No. That is pretty rare as far as natural predators.
Do you have coyote and stuff like that?
Have what, ma'am?
Coyote. We have coyote that kills cows out here.
Yeah. But, you know, if you put a mule or a donkey with that herd, they'll run those cows off.
Well, I heard that. I didn't know if it was true or not. I'm glad you clarified that. My son is wanting to get a few cows. He's wanting to get into it some. He's young, and he's always been interested in it.
Make sure he gets a donkey or a mule.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, I don't know what it is, but boy, they won't back down to those mules or cows. Donkeys won't back down to those cows. They'll chase them off and kick them and everything else.
So how many head of cattle do you have to really make a living between a hobby and a living?
To make a profit, you're going to have over 100 cattle.
So how much land do you have for 100 cattle?
Do what, ma'am?
How much land do you have to home or house 100 cattle?
My partner, Greg, and his family just bought 1,500 acres or 1,800 acres.
Wow.
Up there in Osage County, and he's running 134 mama cows up there, and he is projecting that he's going to have a profit within the next 3 to 4 years total.
That's a lot of land.
That's a lot of land, and he's been bitching at me about helping him pull calves, so I said, my pulling calves days are over. I've done that, so...
We don't even have farms with that much land around here, do we, Lou?
No.
I mean, what's a big farm around here? A
couple hundred acres.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we were...
Well, you got ranches up there. The Dunham Ranch is the... If you watch the cooking channel, the Pioneer Woman.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Her and her husband live in right almost next door to Greg's property, and they've got over 10,000 acres.
Wow.
Their land goes from Pawhuska, Oklahoma, all the way to the Oklahoma-Kansas state line.
So I guess that's why we don't have a whole lot of cattle around here.
It's the Drummond family. It's been in their family for over 100 years. And you hear stories like that all the time with these big ranches. The Four Sixes down in Texas, the Barnett Ranch, same thing. They run big ranches, then they found oil on them, so that even makes it better.
Exactly. By the way, Teresa, when we were talking about having you on the show, and she saw your picture, she said, I know that man. I know him from somewhere. I've seen him.
Is your picture ever in, like, any of the ranch magazines, or have you ever
advertised
in any of those magazines?
Like, what magazine?
Like the Land magazine or Open Fences.
Yeah.
No.
Farm and Ranch magazine.
I guess once a cowboy puts on a hat, they all look the same. Cowboy and a hat and mustache.
If you look on the back of that brochure, you'll see me with my horse, putting my horse on a pedestal. And that's the first thing I do when I get a new horse is put him on that pedestal. And then I'll get on the pedestal on him and then put him back on that pedestal. And the reason I do that is to teach that horse to trust me. I am not going to hurt you. I'm going to take care of you.
How in the world did you get that horse up on
She's looking at the picture.
On that takes, ring.
Takes me about 10 minutes to do it.
Wow.
Carrots or sweet
I'm
talk?
Sorry?
Carrots or sweet talk or a whip?
I use horse cookies or carrots.
Horse cookies.
Horse cookies, of course.
I love it.
But not at first. He's got to get up there. He gets it when he's rewarded when he's up there.
Wow.
Can you imagine that, Teresa?
No. When I was little, we had a horse in the backyard, and I could go crawl off of the back wall. There was a wall, and it dropped down into the land, and then the land was fenced on the outside. But I could go and crawl off of that wall. That horse would come up, and I could crawl on its back, and I would just sit on it. And I was little, and I would sit on that horse's back, and it would just walk around the field and graze. I love horses. They're great.
Jim, we're going to close it. Jim, we're going to close it out if it's okay. We got about 2 minutes. Give us your commercial. Okay. How do they get in touch with you?
To get in touch with me at ColwellRanchAndLand.com or Jay Van Sickle at CB Tulsa. My phone number is 918-645-1188.
So if you want to let a cowboy sell your property, call Cowboy Jim, right?
If you want to come to some beautiful country, I can show you beautiful Oklahoma.
We're on our way. Jim, you've been an incredible guest today. Thank you for your contributions to our show. Stay with us for a second. We're going to close it out here, Rodney.
Okay.
Thank you for joining us today. Let us know how you like the show. If you have any guests or topics you'd like to suggest, we'd appreciate them. All questions are welcome, and all of our guests may be emailed with your questions or concerns as well. This show is for the public and, most importantly, for real estate agents who do not have a source for land education, free land education on this show. After broadcast today, it'll be downloaded on our master website, which is www.letstalkland.net, without an apostrophe, letstalkland.net. Also on Podbean and Spotify. My email is lou@mylandpro.com. My cell number is 336-669-1405. Teresa, how do they get in touch with you?
Hi, I am Teresa Martin, and my number is 336-209-2937. My email is teresa.mylandpro@gmail.com.
Rodney, how do they get us at the station?
Well, they can go to our website, Lou. They can go to WKTE1090.com, and my mic's not working today.
Oh, no. Well, you want to use mine?
You want to give it to them?
You can go to the website, WKTE1090, and you can pick up our show. We're also you can download the Simple Radio app and listen to us anywhere in the world. Right, Ronnie?
That's right, Lou. Anywhere in the world.
Anywhere in the world. And also, we're Beach and Oldie Music, awarded, been nominated for 5 years in a row as the number one beach and oldies station. And you got a award not too long ago for the number one DJ in the area.
That's
congratulations
right.
on that.
Thank you.
So we'll see you next week. Enjoy the show. Thank you.